As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me as always is my lovely co-host Loud Loof Slew.
Oh, I like it. It's true.
Suggested by one of our listeners. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. And if you are subscribed to the exclusive content, you're amazing. You're amazing.
Thank you.
And
for that.
We might name you by name, but I don't have the name the list pulled up right now. But we're excited about this episode. This is a good one. Pretty practical episode. Lou right now is just finished or almost done building out your new setup because you moved to Orange County.
Yep. Yeah. So I say we, but in reality, I only had help for like 4 hours on one day. but it took about 5 days total from buying the material, shipping everything around, and then fully treating out the space. But even then, there's still more I want to do. You know, working from home isn't always going to be the easiest thing to combat.
Yeah. And so you have a space now, you have a house, and in the house, you have a room dedicated to the studio stuff. Yep. And you rebuilt all the acoustic treatment customized for your space. Mm-hmm. You had a fireplace, which was not centered, which we talked about. We laughed about. It was like off by a couple inches or something.
And just wait till I tell you the latest update. Oh, it's going to be one of those like, ba-doom, ba-doom, boom.
What?
Yeah.
It was just off, so you covered it. That's what I was gonna say.
It's covered and everything looks great. But yesterday I was very focused on just getting the clouds up and everything. And I let Henry and David do all the measurements for the placement of the clouds and everything. And they got them into the right depths and field and everything. But when I stood in the back of the room, I noticed that the back cloud was 2 inches to the right. The chimney was 2 inches to the left. So I ended up with something still off center somehow. And now I'm like, you know what? I'll wait 3 months. I'll let my body just get used to seeing that. And if it still bothers me in 3 months, I'll recenter the clouds. Because the whole issue with the chimney is that it was not centered. And now the cloud's not centered. The last piece of the puzzle is the one part that did not get centered right.
That's all right. But the clouds are permanently installed, right? So
yeah.
It'd be a bitch and a half just to move it.
I'm pretty handy.
All right. Well, yeah. Cool. But anyway, so today's episode is about how to make a less than ideal recording space more ideal. Specifically, this is going to be for like home studios. If you're working mm-hmm. from home and you have set boundaries, like you have a set ceiling height, you know, that is of a residential, residential ceiling height. You know, you got square rooms or things of that nature. How do we go about fixing these things to make sound ideal? How do we use the space to make different instruments and different recordings? sound great as well. We're going to talk about recording spaces, and then we're going to talk about mixing spaces as well. And Lou is more of an acoustician than I am. But I think that it's fair to say that neither of us are like full on.
Yeah, neither one of us went to school specifically to become a
like we don't have a master's degree or graduate degree in acoustics, but we have built, especially Lou more than me, have built many recording studios, and we understand the basic concept of what sounds good. And we both have the experience to know when a room sounds good. We may not know exactly why, but we can say, yes, this sounds good, and these rooms don't sound good. So a couple things that we should talk about is, first, let's just go straight into, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about ceilings first? Or do you want to go into absorption first? What direction?
Let's just talk about practicality, like just general recording. Because a lot of people that usually work from home sometimes have the battle of either I can't record too loud, or I have to record within a certain time frame because my neighbors.
So let's talk about soundproofing versus acoustic treatment.
Yeah, that's usually the first battle that
most people has. Most people listening may already know the difference, but let's talk about it briefly. Like in 30 seconds, what's the difference between sound treatment and
sound treatment? You're treating the inside of the space to sound a specific type of way. Soundproofing is you trying to avoid any exterior sounds from coming in and any interior sounds from coming out.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
It's so if you don't want to bother your neighbors, that's soundproofing. If you want to make the room sound good for recording or for mixing, that's sound treatment.
Yeah, and a space that is good for recording and a space that is good for mixing are also two different types of treatments.
Yes. Well, briefly, generalizing, what do you think between those two?
Mixing in a home studio typically has like a 3 to 5 decibel range within a flat response. So like you can have peaks and dips within a 3 to 5 decibel range. In most pro studios, it's between 2 and 3 decibel dips.
But you're talking about RT60, like reverb times?
Frequency response and reverb times is typically around like 200 to 300 milliseconds in a like mixing space. Right. While in a live room, you could have half a second, you can have a whole second, depending on what you want your live room to sound like. Mm-hmm. For instance, when we went to what used to be 17 Hertz one-on-one studios, that live room was very live. Even though it had a lot of absorption kind of stuff going on around the top, the bottom half of the walls were all natural wood or glass, and it was all caving in. So you heard a lot of that room booming, but you didn't hear like ringing. You didn't hear any like flutter echo or anything. They treated it to sound live, but it was so big that you could get some tight recordings in the center of the room.
Yeah, the drums sounded huge just being in that room.
But it didn't sound echoey or boomy. It sounded live and open.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't mix in a very live and open room because it's just too much going on in the room. You would kind of treat it to be a little bit tighter and a little more focused.
So generally speaking, a mixing setup in a mixing room, you want it as not dead, basically as dead as possible and balanced as possible.
Yeah, dead is safe.
And then in a live room situation where you're recording instruments, you want it to be as balanced as possible. And that may be, depending on your space, if your room is small and you're not going to be able to get a live, open sound, you
without
might just kill
too
it.
Much like sound reflecting in a bad way.
Yeah, it might be best to just kill it.
Yeah.
Versus if you have bigger space, if you, for some reason, you're in a living room or something like that, you got more space, higher ceilings.
Yeah.
Or you're in a
if
loft
situation. If you're one of the
situations.
People in like Malibu with the, like your 20-foot ceilings in the living room, like you're probably doing fine.
Yeah. So I think that's what, so those are the two different types of situations that we want to be in. Let's talk about in a non-ideal space using absorption in a recording room, and then let's go into a mixing room a little bit later at the end.
Sure.
First off, in a recording room, if you have multiple rooms in a house or in an apartment or whatever, and you haven't quite put anything in. So you just moved in, you haven't picked a room, which one to use. They're very similar, but what things are you looking for when you want to pick a space, which room to work in?
Typically not square. Square usually has like nodes that all just kind of align on top of each other because it's equal distant in every direction.
That's the same with mixing too. You want to pick the longer room.
Yeah. So like, let's say you're putting a vocalist in the middle of the room. Chances are they're having phase cancellations in the middle of the room because reflections are 3 feet to the left and 3 feet to the right, 3 feet in front of you, 3 feet behind you. So it's equal wavelength. And let's say that whatever frequency is 3 feet long, then it nulls itself out just outside of you. But if it's 6 feet long, you're actually nulling right on top of yourself.
Yeah. So like, for example, like a one bedroom, the master bedroom for some, like maybe like 16 by 15 feet, yeah. and the smaller bedroom might be 11 and a half feet by 15 feet.
Yeah.
Actually speaking, dimensionally, that 11 and a half by 15 is going to be better room.
Yeah.
Especially if it's longwise and if you can put your desk in the middle. Anyway, that's...
ways to combat it by like putting up like floor standing baffles and put them like almost caving in on themselves. So you kind of minimize some of those like pretty static reflections, but it goes back into like, what are you recording? What's the goal?
Maybe we briefly talk about absorption and acoustics and how egg cartons and foam doesn't work.
Yeah. And carpets. I actually looked up the study on carpets for sound, which is kind of fascinating to see what they actually do and what they don't do. And
the absorption coefficients or whatever the hell it's called.
It's literally like 1 decibel at 1K and above.
Yeah, so it's very, very little. I mean, it's something, but it's very little.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that real quick. So basically, in the professional world, what you want to use is 703 Owen and Corning.
So it depends. So there's been a shift into mineral wool, like rock wool.
Rock wool is popular.
Reason being is that Owen's Corning 703, it is fire rated and everything. It is good. The price per what you're getting is decent compared to other like rock
wool equivalents. But some sort of insulation wrapped in wood and
fabric.
The reason
rock wool has become popular is because it's not insulation. It's not using fiberglass.
Oh, so it's safer?
It's safer. It's better for your health. When you touch it, you don't need to wear protective gloves because it's not a bunch of pieces of fiberglass going into your skin. Mm-hmm. It's actually just
and
rock that's been broken down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And if you want something that's an equivalent to it, you can do like Comfort Board 60 or 80, and it's an equivalent price, if not a little bit cheaper, with rock wool. So a lot of the acoustics being done in studios, like if you hire a Fabric Mate, they use their own Recore, which is actually better spec-wise than Owens Corning 703 or Rockwool, you know, because it's a bit easier to handle. It's less of a breathing hazard and all that. So all around, it's safer for the people who build panels, and it's safer for people who have them in their space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I want to bring this up briefly. Little bit of a tangent here. DL in the comments of the live stream, we are live streaming right now, asks, does working out of a house, what does it say? Do you really want rappers to know where you live? Basically working out of a house, the dangers of working out of a house. We'll say it is ideal to not work in a house for tracking, mixing it matters less, but for tracking for safety reasons, because you have to have the clients come into the house and you don't know who you're working with sometimes.
Yeah.
It is safer to do it outside of the house, but we're talking about like
if you have to work from home,
whatever.
Yeah. Like some people, a great example of this notion is if you look up Andrew Masters on YouTube and you see like, I forget what the series is called, but basically like unbelievable home studios or crazy home studios, whatever. But the people that are doing these crazy home studios and all that, they have their own safety precautions in place, but usually they only work with the same people they've been working with for a while.
Part
of their success is consistency. And so you don't bring around people that you don't trust.
That's a good point. Yeah. Typically you don't. Yeah. If you are working in a home studio in a producing recording setting. If you've been doing it for a while, you work with people you already know. You're not bringing in new clients from Google Maps, like random people. So I think it's not an issue so much of like rappers necessarily, but it's more of an issue of like if you're consistently working with random people that you've never worked with before, that is something to consider when setting up a home studio versus outside studio. But let's just continue to talk about like if this is the thing that you've decided,
working
at home is like the only thing that you're able to do, whatever, or if you're just there as a hobbyist. I mean, lots of people are hobbyists listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
So so going back to absorption, using some sort of, you can buy panels like GIK Acoustics, which we always recommend. Mm-hmm. They should sponsor us. If you're out in LA, there's like John Hunter Acoustics, who like he builds, customizes, installs them all himself, or his team does. It's the same sort of thing. But you literally build hundreds of acoustic panels every single year in various sizes.
Yeah.
And they're really quite more affordable than people think, especially when you buy them. Because GIK, if you buy this 2 foot by 4 foot it's like 4 or 5, 6 inches deep. I think it's this one's like 5 inches deep, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think then, it's the 4-inch plus 3/4-inch or 1.5 inches of framing in the back.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. That's like, I think for like a box of two panels is close to,
bucks?
It's like close to $200.
I think it's like $100 each.
Yeah, it's like $100 each-ish. Building it yourself.
If I were to, so I actually just did this weekend.
Yeah.
I cracked open one just to see what it was, because I needed to build two more identicals. Total cost of material, broke it down to about $30.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So literally about $30 a panel, $30 to $50 per panel, I think is a great idea. And we've done episodes in the past that measure, like they basically there's a website that you can go to determine how much of the wall you should be covering in absorptive material. But this is very, very important, especially in a home environment, especially if you're in a non-ideal space, square, low ceilings, things of that nature. Deader is better is a phrase that we hear often in the industry that we want to clarify. That's not exactly true. We want to rephrase it to deader is safer, especially in non-ideal acoustic environments, but it's not better. Better for recording is oftentimes live, spacious, open rooms.
Yeah. Right? Like, for instance, if you ever listen to a recording in your home that you did in your closet full of clothing and all that, because I'll be honest, I think just about everybody's done that at some point, whether it was like recording at a client's house or recording at your own place, or you just needed a quick solution. There's a certain amount of like boxiness to the sound, even in a bigger dead space. Like it just, there's something unnatural about it. And so when we talk about these like big grandiose vocals that just sound like they're right in front of you, a lot of times it's like the mic isn't right on their mouth. In fact, if you're recording with your mouth against the mic, you're doing it wrong. Just to give you context, you should read your owner's manual or go to the website and see their recommended spacings. And a lot of times you'll see about 6 inches to like a foot sometimes. But realistically speaking, like you want that big grandiose sound, you need space. And sometimes that room is part of that space, because the more space you give yourself between the mic and your source, whether it be a guitar amp or anything, the more you're going to hear the room play a factor in the sound.
Yeah, there's the idea of, okay, so we got room effects, nodes, and there's a couple ideas. For example, if you want to be really cheap, I think it looks better if you build panels. Like if you're watching on YouTube or Twitch or whatever, and you see our videos, you see I have acoustic panels lined up on the walls. If there's other ways that you could do it, like for example, if you go to, this can be stinky, but for some reason you have like a bunch of like
Arlux
mattresses. Like bed mattresses that you can line them up against the wall. I've seen like a mattress fort instead of a vocal booth made of like twin mattresses stacked on top of each other, things like that. That would work well. I've seen also like heavy weighted moving blankets put not on the wall directly, but like hung via like a couple inches off the wall with like a some sort of like hanger, or what is it, like the curtain hangers where
it's curtain rods, but they put a frame together out of it.
Rods, so it's like a few inches, maybe like 4 inches off the wall, and then they hang heavy duty moving blankets around.
There's a company that actually popped up because of this trend, and they sell you a PVC kit, so it's literally PVC piping for plumbing. But they also give you like a dense little curtain to actually put on it. Yeah. So you can do that. And in fact, I actually know plenty of people that are signed to labels that actually record like that from home. Yeah. But honestly speaking, like there's a bunch of different ways, but one of the biggest issues that a lot of people run into in their home is like noise. You know, maybe the door doesn't have any weather stripping or anything, so you can't really block out the sound from outside. The room gets hot, but the AC is loud, so you're trying to record with the window open so it doesn't get too hot. You might be, like in my case, the room is 25 feet long, but at the 25th foot is a kitchen. you know? So part of the issue can be that maybe you hear the fridge going off in the background or something, you know? Maybe you live near an airport and the plane flies by once in a while, you know? That's where, like, soundproofing is kind of the factor. And no amount of acoustic panels is going to make all of these things go away. It can help dampen it, though, because when we're talking about noise reduction or lowering the intensity of sounds escaping a space, we're talking about velocity, like, blocking, essentially. Like, you want to reduce the amount of velocity from the frequency, right? If you can put up some panels for bass absorption.
Wait, I don't know this term. Okay, velocity from frequency.
So the idea is, like, you want to reduce the velocity of something, like the amount of pressure being pushed onto it as it's moving in a direction, right? If you put a panel in front of it, you kind of dampen that velocity. Does that make
I'm
going
to have to trust you. I've never heard this, but I don't know what I'm talking about. So
I could be voicing wrong, but look it up. It's a thing where they're like, okay, you can't soundproof, but you can dampen through, like, shaping the velocity. You can slow it down. And that's what, like, putting
up through
a baffle.
Air?
Yeah.
Like putting up, solid air.
Solid air, put up a baffle, and it slows down the air. It won't stop it, but it will slow it down. The bass will not be suddenly blocked off because you put one baffle up.
Yeah.
But if you notice, when you're tracking in a live room with a band and something, they'll put baffles around the drum set. The idea is to try to minimize the bleed into other mics, right? That's the whole concept. It's not going to soundproof anything, but it can help. So maybe you put a baffle in front of a door that has a bunch of noise behind it. It's not going to soundproof it, but it'll at least minimize the noise floor.
Or, like, sealing all the cracks. So, for example, like, you can get, like, under the door, you can get, like, the
weather stripping.
Weather stripping or some sort of, like, you've seen it, where it's like you open, close that space.
Yeah, I had to install three of them this coming week. They're called... what are they called?
But it's funny because, like, open air is the worst transmitter of sounds. So, like, water, like, through in water or through solids, sound travels faster.
Yeah.
So if you use some sort of, like, dense fabric or rock wool and then leave open air behind it, that'll kill the most amount of sound. We're talking about soundproofing now, but when it comes to acoustic treatments with the rooms, absorption is the way to go. Diffusion is something that is going to be used for larger rooms.
Honest, if you're in a room that's like 10 by 8 or something like that, or even 10 by 15, diffusion won't actually fully work. Like 10 by 15 is, like, I guess you could say, like, a bare minimum if you run it, put it on the 15 foot run of it. You know, like, diffusion needs space to fully work.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There you go. So That's another thing to think about. So just gaskets, make sure.
That's what it's called.
Gaskets.
Oh, just gaskets. Door gaskets. Yeah. They make specific ones like auto release gaskets and all that. On a current project, I have to do like three of them where they're the same ones that are put up at Capitol.
So briefly, I want to talk about your room since you literally just did this. First off, you built a room for, are we allowed to say who? Like, you did you finish that room, the Too Short room?
Actually, yeah. So Too Short, his room should be done this week.
Is that the one with the lighting strips?
With the
strips?
LED and everything.
Yeah, yeah, okay, okay, yeah. Cool, cool. So that one is going to be used for tracking or for mixing or for both?
Both. We built a 9x6 vocal booth with 10-foot ceilings.
Okay, so let's talk about how you approach that room. Mm-hmm. And the we don't have to talk specifically about the budgets, but how that could impact what were able to do.
Yeah,
and
then versus your challenge.
House. Yeah, and versus your house where, so tell us about the dimensions and how you approach those and try to solve the problems.
Sure. I could say it's not like I signed an NDA, so I'll speak obviously respectfully, but also just saying like some of the changes that were made throughout the time.
Like what was the dimensions of the room, the T-shirts room?
For instance, the control room is roughly, I think, 17 or 18 by 28.
Oh, it's a large room.
It's a big room. It's bigger than our A room for sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Like imagine our A room plus the booth is all the A room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you use absorption? Like how much absorption did you use in the back of the room, front of the room? Like, did you do like a couple feet of absorption
so
on either side?
There's different stages of absorption. I'll say it like that. So as far as, just to clarify, absorption for the acoustic treatment or absorption for the soundproofing? Like, because it is technically made by home contractors.
Okay, so you have two layers. No, let's just talk about the treatment, acoustic treatment.
Okay, so we tried to keep it simple and tried to keep the cost down. So what we did is we went with ReCore, which actually has a, if you want to look up the coefficient chart, like it actually does really well around like 250. And then 500 is usually where most absorption, like material, like Rockwool 703, 500 is usually when they do the best. So this one does better at lower frequencies, even at 2 inches. So we did FabricMate. We contracted FabricMate to come out. SPG is the company that did the installation. And they basically did 2 inches all around of ReCore, but on the speaker wall and on the corners in the mix position, we actually did 12 inches deep. So we actually created acoustic baffles into the corners of Too Short's mix positions. So you'll see like the ceiling is 9 feet tall, but right above the mix position, it's actually 10 feet tall. So in the corners, we packed it with 12 inches of absorption and then put actual like the same fabric that we're using for the rest of the paneling into those corners. So it looks like consistency from the ceiling to the walls. And then in the speaker walls and in the sub cavities, we actually packed those with insulation as well, surrounding the speaker and everything, because part of the cavity design is leaving it open for them to actually swap out what speaker they're using in the future. So like they have certain speakers now, but if they want to buy Augsburgers, they can actually reframe into Augsburgers.
Oh, sweet.
Without having to like completely destroy what they built.
Hold on. So let's go back into this. So how much of the square footage of the wall did you put acoustic treatment on? Is it fully covered?
All of it, except the ceiling, except for the mix position. The mix position, we built a 10 by 8, I think it is, a 10 by 8 ceiling cloud that's 6 inches, and we have it spaced 6 inches off of the ceiling.
So basically the entire room is covered in fabric walls with
absorptive
material.
Except for the back ceiling.
Except for the back ceiling.
Yeah.
Right, so that's pretty high grade. That costs a lot. That takes a lot more planning. That you had contractors in place.
Just for the fabric made alone, I think we still had a budget of like 25 to 30 grand.
For just the fabric.
Just fabric mate. The whole treatment.
Okay. Yeah. And then for you and like, let's go into your home studio that you literally just finished building out.
Yeah.
What were you trying to solve? Like obviously I would be surprised if you had like 30.
One.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you don't have, probably you don't have like a 30, 50 grand budget for your home studio.
Hell no, I don't. I wish I did. What am I doing at that place?
What within your restrictions, what are the most important things? Like what are the priorities that you have and how did you go about fixing the problems that you found?
Correcting RT60 is usually the first issue most people have.
So RT60 is what?
Reverb time?
Reverb time,
60 milliseconds.
Yeah, I don't
like
yeah.
how long it takes for a certain frequency to decay below 60 dB. That's what it was.
Yeah. Not milliseconds. Yeah. yeah. So tell us about this. And so you talked about reflection points, the obvious reflection points.
Yeah. So usually it's the first reflection points that everybody's going to treat first, because if you think about like comb filtering, right, you have the first signal coming from your speaker and then bouncing off the wall and coming towards you. It's the same idea even if you're setting up a booth. Like if you think about putting a vocal in the dry room, that vocal is bouncing off of those walls and getting back into the mic. So usually first reflection points is what you're trying to tackle first. But there's also things like corners where there's bass buildup and things of that nature. There's also the back of the room, which is slapping the signal back to you.
And you have a very long room. What are the dimensions of your room?
9.5 by 25 feet.
Oh, so it's long and narrow.
It's very long and it's narrow.
That's pretty ideal, though. That's fairly ideal because you could throw it into the back.
Yeah. Like, I won't be able to fit Augsburgers, but I can definitely fit, like, some focal trios with or Genelec 1037s
and stuff. And with a long throw room, you can actually have sub-frequencies. Like, you can actually, like, put in a
sub. I'm not going to lie. My low end is oddly, like, I'm curious to hear subs in my room and see if I actually need them. Because I've...
No, I'm saying that you actually have the space long throw wise for the sub frequencies to develop.
Yeah.
Without phase issues. Exactly. Without like as many nodes. And it's interesting. Yeah.
We did a session on Saturday, my first sit in session. Mm-hmm. In fact, first session period. Like, in fact, part of the driving reason why I worked on it so quickly versus taking my time was because I had already scheduled sessions. Like people that regularly like to work with me in person that just they're used to coming to my place. They know my stuff. They know I know my stuff on my system, and they'd prefer for me to work on my stuff on my system than go somewhere else. Yeah. So I needed to meet deadlines when I set this up. Yeah.
So anyway, so first off, you don't have a $50,000 budget. So you were working on first reflections. Mm-hmm. You were just building acoustic panels. How did you go about tackling it? So you picked one side of the room. You were going to do long throw. That was the first thing.
Yeah.
So the length of the room is behind you.
Yeah.
The 25 feet is basically behind you. You're right into the corner. In your case, you have a fireplace on one side. So you covered it up because it was ugly.
And built a false wall and a false floor for it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So you build out, you framed it, you did a little bit of framing. How deep are your panels right in front of you, covering the fireplace?
They are all 6 inches deep, except for the corner traps. The corner traps are 12 inches deep.
Nice. Yeah. And corners is where bass builds up. So this is pretty common knowledge. Bass builds up in the corner. So if you want to, I would say that that's the biggest issue is like low end buildup, because that's hardest to take care of with basic absorptive materials. Like, I don't understand exactly what's going on, but basically the more low end you want, the deeper the absorptive materials has to be. For example, if you only have like 1 inch of absorptive material, it's only going to catch frequencies up down to like 2K. Versus like if you have a foot of absorptive materials, it might go down to like 80 hertz.
I think there's I forget what the name of the website is, but there's like an acoustic absorber calculator website. Basically, you can say what the actual absorption material is like its actual density. And then you can plug that in, say how deep the panel's going to be.
I'm going to look it up right now while you're talking. What did you call it?
Put like acoustic absorber calculator. It should pop up with that. But you can actually see the effect of air gapping acousticmodeling.com. That's the one.
So
check it out. 100 millimeters is 4 inches. Every 25 is an inch. So if we were to say 100 plus, watch, go down. Instead, keep that 100 there. And then, so just...
air gap?
Yeah, air gap is 100 as well. So watch, hit calculate, and you can see where the coefficient actually shows you.
Oh,
you're getting lower absorption, but you lose a little bit of that like 900 hertz, 800 hertz when you add that air gap. So what you're doing is you're extending the absorption into the low end, but you're sacrificing other ranges.
Okay, hold on, real quick. This is acousticmodeling.com slash porous. Just type in like, what did we type in? Acoustic absorber calculator, and you can like compare just off of like
material
physics and acoustics.
And
you can calculate how much these frequencies are being absorbed. And just by adding what we're looking at is a graph that is literally comparing 100 millimeters of absorption versus 100 millimeters of absorption and 100 millimeters of air right behind that absorption. And you can see that it goes down, it catches frequencies almost 100 hertz lower.
Yeah.
With air.
With air.
Yeah, yeah, which is cool.
The whole idea behind that is, once again, like we were talking about earlier, by affecting the velocity of the frequency, just the source material's velocity in the air, right? By slowing it down a little bit, it still goes through the panel. That's why we can't soundproof with just acoustic panels. It's not going to happen. But because it's hitting that wall and trying to get back, it actually has to go through that material a second time versus just being trapped against the wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's going through another layer of absorption.
And the air is just the worst transmitter of sounds anyway.
Now, here's the catch, though. If you were to plug in a bigger air gap, you'll notice that it starts losing its effectiveness. So your air gapping usually has to be 1-to-1 at a max. So if you plug in like a 200 air gap,
let's go 400.
You see that? Start losing other things. Like, you get more low end, but you're starting to lose out on your mid absorption.
Interesting. So let's do like 50. Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
and it's actually more consistent with the rest of the absorption.
So let's go like 200 millimeters of absorptive materials.
Yeah, so an 8-inch panel with a 2-inch gap or 4-inch gap. See?
Yeah, and then let's go 200 here. Yeah, it starts getting like interesting. Yeah,
so I think 300 would make my corner trap.
Interesting. Yeah, like there's only so much air that you can put in before it starts to create...
If you were to plug in absorber thickness 300.
Okay. Is that what you have right now?
Yeah.
Okay, 300.
And then the air gap behind it is about 200, so 8 inches.
And by the way, there's like,
really
there's
working hard.
Yeah, this is based on, there's also different types of absorptive materials have different types of like whatever coefficients. I forgot what it's called.
Yeah. Like, imagine the density of like Safe and Sound, which is very fluffy, and something that has like a higher R rating, like Comfort Board 60 or Comfort Board 80. You'll see like R ratings of like 15, 30, 45, 60. But the whole idea is they become more rigid and firm. They're still technically breathable. They're still actually designed for sound and things of that nature. But you'll start noticing that a little more rigid of a material actually does better absorption in the low end. It's because it actually has a lot more force to hold it back versus the fluffier material. The fluffier material has an easier time absorbing kind of like mids and higher up of that, but have a harder time maintaining what's going on in the lows. Click that box. Boom.
Sorry, the website was going down for a second.
And that's what my corner traps are doing.
Yeah, your corner traps are getting almost
about 3 times more effective in the low end.
Yeah, and in the sub frequencies below 100 hertz.
Yeah,
that's super cool. Yeah. So, for example, one of the most in the area, like a big famous room for its acoustic treatment was like Bob's room.
Echo Room, which is now Fab Factory. Which I found out,
but it was
Bob's room stayed almost exactly the same. The only thing that changed is the color aesthetic. They kept his room exactly the same because there was no need to change it.
But he has like, I think he has like 4 feet of material in front of the front of his room, and the back end was like another 4 to 6 feet of acoustic treatment.
Yeah, and then even then, there's still air gaps.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, and I think in his air gaps, he showed me a photo of the diagram once, and maybe I missaw this, but usually when I see this, this is what it shows. He has floating panels in the inside of it that are at different angles, and that way it refocuses the energy versus just absorbing it. It actually plays with the frequencies and just pushes them in a different direction as well.
Yeah.
So as they enter the gap, like, they actually go through another stage of, I don't know what his logic behind it was, but he has one of the best sounding rooms in LA. So it's something that I'm really curious about.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about this going back to, before we get super ultra nerdy and start talking about things that we quite frankly, is past our depth of knowledge here. Some of the things that are really practical, if you are recording or mixing from home, use a lot more absorptive materials. Don't use egg crates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't use like egg cartons or the Amazon 1-inch to 2-inch fabric thing. Not only does it not look good, it's hard to, no, let me say it again. It's difficult to make it look good. And on top of that, it's not that effective. It's better than nothing, but it's just not worth the money, especially if you can build it yourself.
I'm not going to lie. there's two really big red flags with those things once you get to a certain point. This isn't an elitist mindset, but it's more like a once you know, it's hard to just look away. Once you know that those things are not effective and you walk into a space with somebody who talks the big talk about their amazing studio and then you see like those foam things on the wall or egg crates, you're like, I don't think this person actually knows what they're talking about because they wouldn't be using this and talking so big about it.
It's not professional.
Whenever I see ads on like Facebook Marketplace or all that kind of stuff where people are trying to promote their smaller studios and stuff like that, and it's like, oh, one of the best sounding rooms in LA, and I see foam, I'm like,
there's no way.
I don't see it. And the other side too is the amount of money that you're paying for that. You could have built your own panel. Like if a friend of mine, he builds speakers and it turns out like his dad actually has like a full wood shop and everything. If you can just talk to your dad, your friend, your anybody that has tools and just say, hey, I will pay you X amount just to help me out for the day, you'd probably, with what you paid them, still spent less and gotten significantly better results.
So again, we always recommend... Okay, so there's a couple things that I want to wrap up with, couple ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One, the most important thing you should spend your money on is acoustic treatment. This is before converters.
The first thing I did with my new space.
Yes, this is before preamps. This is before converters. This is before microphone. This is before compressors, anything else, outboard gear, anything else. The first thing that you should do is to have acoustic treatment. Yeah. If you are spending money on, especially on compressors, do you need to take that?
It can wait for a second.
Okay, yeah. Sure. If you but anyway, there's a if you need to, that's the first things first. Before microphones, anything, work on acoustic treatments. It's not the most fun expense. It's not the funnest thing to buy, but it's going to make your mic sound better. It's going to actually help your preamp sound better. Anything that you buy in the signal chain later, it's going to sound better. It's going to make your speakers sound better. It's just going to, everything is going to relate back down to the acoustic treatment of your room. Number two, the thing that I want to talk about, or recap, is you can learn how to build this acoustic treatment yourself. Just go on YouTube, how to build acoustic panels. There's so many different techniques and ways to build them at various different costs with different materials. And it is significantly more... the barrier to entry on, if let's say you're someone that's never worked with your hands like me, I don't have a history of contractors in my bloodline, you know, like I don't know how to do anything with my hands, but even I have built many acoustic panels and can do it pretty easily.
Yeah.
So it's, the barrier of entry is pretty low, and it's something that you're just going to have to do. Like if you're trying to do audio for a living, this is a skill worth having, how to build acoustic panels. And I know many people, including you, who went from a necessity of my own to building it for other people as a part of my income. That is one way of building income that you can do. So it's a good skill to have regardless.
And it's actually a really good, I guess you could say, opener into, hey, I want to get to know these people. Sometimes those people need help with other things other than just production.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing. Acoustic treatment is the number one indicator of like, do you know what you're doing or not?
Yeah.
It's just straight down.
It's a priority shower.
It is, exactly.
If you've got all the best speakers in a non-treated room, period. Yeah. Like let's just say that you spent $20,000 on speakers, but you're still working in a room that sounds like a bathroom.
You're not getting the $20,000 out of those speakers.
No. Nope.
Nor are you impressing anybody that actually knows anything about those speakers.
Yeah. So, which at which point, if you bought them because of, let's just say, ego, then you're not doing it your justice, you know?
But anyway, this is a very important thing, which is why we bring it up. We're talking about it. If you do have questions, I'm sure if you tag Lou on Discord, he'll answer basic questions.
Yeah.
If you want to do more in-depth designing and planning, then Lou, I'm sure, has a consultation fee where he charges by hour per project or something like that, just for some schematics and ideas.
I'm actually flying out Wednesday morning to New York to do a consultation out there. No, to Texas.
Yeah. Those are very different places, New York and Texas.
Yes, they are, but they're places that I don't typically go to.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Cool. So this is something you can do. Just join our Discord. I think mixofmusicpodcast.com/Discord. You can always ask some questions. And if you have the budgets, there are professional studio designers. You know, you can hire Lou for a full project if you have the budgets to do so. If you need some help with any sort of stuff, There it is. So just be very understanding of, or sorry, let me rephrase that. Just understand how much work should go into this and how important this is. I don't think we can properly tell you the weight of the importance of this stuff, especially mixing. I think I said we would talk about mixing rooms, but in mixing rooms, corners are important. Getting the sound to be focused and direct. So reflection points, there's lots of YouTube channels that talk about reflection points and using a mirror on the wall, things like that.
Yeah, the mirror trick is the easiest to understand. If you could see the speaker, chances are it's reflecting right back at you from that point.
Yeah, so, and then same thing with like clouds and things of that nature.
Oh my God, I just put mine up yesterday and the world of the difference that it made. Oh.
The one of the best basic acoustics videos for setting up a mixing room it's the video. No. It's what's his name? Oh my goodness. It's Sonic Scoop. Sonic Scoop has like a 30-minute podcast episode about acoustics and setting up speakers, and it's sponsored by KRK. So you'll notice he's like using KRK speakers to demonstrate, and he talks about nodes and like 30%. It's like not putting the speakers 30% or 50% and like different percentages of the room to avoid nodes, which is a whole nother conversation that we're not talking about.
There's another room calculator where if you just plug in your room's dimensions and everything, and it can actually tell you some basic node points that should pop up.
Yeah. So anyway, so for more basics on how acoustics work, go watch that Sonic Scoop episode. It's really fantastic. He does a great job. There's a lot more. I think that this is something that if you want to have a studio, we want to emphasize the importance of educating yourself, at least on the very basics, as much as we've done the research on. Like, I feel like Lou has more knowledge than I do, but I think like the basic understanding, even for me, like you should be able to pass a 100 level college class acoustics without studying. Like, like that is the amount of information that you kind of should know when building out a studio. So go ahead and do that. So and also, watch videos and do research. If
just word of advice, don't buy a Helmholtz resonator unless you can actually prove that the person building it knows what they're doing, because they're extremely hard to build. They're extremely expensive, and you need so many of them that if you have a room anywhere smaller than 10 by 15, it actually makes little to no difference.
Yeah,
unless you're that specific with the measurements and know what you're doing.
Yeah, Helmholtz resonators are very complicated. But anyway, that's it for this episode. Hopefully it helps. I know there's a lot of information missing, and I think the parts of our knowledge which we don't know is very obvious. But I think that we hope that this conversation empowers you to do some of your own research and to get a better sounding room and to get better recordings, better music, sound more professional. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.